Good morning, and so I'm going to be talking about coherent dynamics of coupled electron and nuclear spin quantum bits. And I guess this is kind of a dose of reality after all the beautiful equations and graphs that you've been seeing. But since all of us experimentalists are really just failed theoreticians, so I'll still try to stick to a Hey, I'm an experimentalist, so I'm glad to admit it. So I just want to stick to something a little, which is still beautiful in terms of being able to understand it in a kind of a simplified model. So at the outset, let me acknowledge all of my collaborators, especially Lily Childress, who's one of the grad students who's working with me on this project, and our other collaborators here. And I would also like to thank our funding sources mentioned over here. Okay, so today I'm going to discuss quantum control of single spins, and seeing as this is a conference on quantum control, I think this is quite relevant. I'll begin by talking about our system, which is the electron spin of a nitrogen vacancy center in a diamond, and I'll talk about our experimental progress in understanding this single electron spin's mesoscopic environment, which we have done using spin echo spectroscopy, and identified that carbon-13 nuclei are the leading decoherence source in our system. And then I want to talk about our recent work, where we have shown that you can do single nuclear spin addressing via quantum back action of the electron spin on the nuclei, and to study single nuclear spin dynamics by this coherent interactions between electron and nuclear spin qubits. Okay, so solid-state quantum systems are highly interesting to study from the point of view of quantum control, because they have tight confinement and strong interactions, which presumably should lead to fast quantum operations as well as easy entanglement between quantum objects. And here, for example, what I show is like a quantum semiconductor quantum dot and Cooper pair boxes, in which a lot of progress has been made in doing elementary quantum logic. So what I'm going to be talking about is mostly the electron spins in semiconductors, in particular color centers. And electron spins in semiconductors are, of course, a very promising stable qubit candidate, and there are a number of ways which have been proposed as well as kind of implemented to manipulate and measure these things, and also for scaling. There's a lot of efforts in this area. And the challenge, of course, in all of these experiments is to do quantum control in a very complex mesoscopic system. So the system that we are looking at is a nitrogen vacancy color center in high purity diamond. So the structure is shown here. It's a substitutional nitrogen coupled in the nearest lattice site. There's a missing carbon, and most of the wave function is believed to be sitting close to this vacancy site. So you can think of it as a little molecule with a little point dipole sitting there, which is not exactly true, but just for our purposes now. And I like to call this like kind of like a trapped ion, if I may, although of course we are not at the level of the beautiful experiments with ion traps. But the reason is that you have a nice optical emission at 637 nanometers. This is the zero phonon line, and then there are phonon sidebands which extend from 650 to 730 nanometers, which are caused by excitation into the excited state, and then relaxation through phonon sidebands. So this the other interesting thing here is that you can do both resonant excitation on that first excited state there, as well as just excitation with green and letting it relax very fast through the upper vibronic sidebands. So if you look more closely at the ground state structure, it turns out it's a spin triplet in the ground state. And there is a MS equal to 0 and an MS equal to plus minus 1 states, which are non-degenerate even at zero magnetic field, with a splitting of around 2.87 gigahertz. And so this interesting thing about the spin is that it can be optically polarized by just using, for example, scattering a few with a green laser or with a laser tuned to the 637 nanometer side excited state. Further, the fact that you can do optical polarization is nice, but also you can detect optically the state of the spin of this electron spin, and that is because the MS equal to 0 state fluoresces more than the MS equal to plus minus 1 state, just like in ion systems. So here's our experimental setup. We use confocal imaging to look at our diamond sample, and these circled dots here, are these are our images of our nitrogen vacancy centers in the lattice. And if you tune to one of these, you can lock to one of these spatially, and you can do, for example, anti-bunching measurements of the looking at the correlation of the photon statistics. And this has already been done and shown. It's a very nice stable single photon source by several groups. And so what I want to talk about is that you can use this system of looking at a particular NV center that you can just lock to spatially, and then you can apply like a pulse sequence where you optically polarize the spin with the first pulse here, then apply some pulse sequence in the RF domain to do spin manipulation, and then you can detect the state of the spin after the manipulation by applying again by doing photon counting. And here, for example, is data for a single spin Rabi oscillation where we just vary the width of the RF pulse in between, and you can see the data. It's clearly that you can see the Rabi oscillation, but also you can there's imperfect contrast. It's not 100% fluorescence change. And the reason, which is kind of known now or believed at least, is that there's a competition between optical pumping and shelving. I won't get into this. But what it allows us to do at the moment is just to use this to calibrate the measurement efficiency for all of our other data set that we're going to be taking in the rest of the talk. So I just want to talk about the environment of this NV center that that you can think about. So the diamond host is a very nice host. You've got a mostly spinless carbon-12 nuclei, which are sitting in the lattice. And there are only a few contributors to defacing that you can think about. One is there is a local interactions with the nitrogen that is sitting right nearby, which is a spin-1 system for nitrogen-14, for example. And the other are just non-local couplings with, for example, impurities. One impurity is just carbon-13, an isotope which has I equal to 1/2 spin, and that's like 1.1% impurity in the lattice. And then there are other impurities, for example, nitrogen, which is just naturally present in most diamond samples. So that's why we need very pure samples which have very few nitrogen spins, because this would obviously be a big source of defacing in the system. So this is like an important caveat. So in a very simple-minded kind of model, you can write down the effective Hamiltonian that the spin experiences. So you have coupling to all of these different nuclei or other electron spins, and you can write down the Hamiltonian as some effective nuclear field. And at high temperature, most of these nuclear field spins are unpolarized, and therefore you have basically like a random nuclear field that's acting on your single qubit that you're looking at. And so this random nuclear field is going to have some correlations. If it's you can kind of like measure that with, for example, Ramsey spectroscopy, and we have done that. I'm not talking about that. It's roughly in the range of 1 to 2 microseconds for several centers that we looked at. So, of course, to get rid of these kind of long correlations, what you can do is apply a spin echo sequence. And here, for example, the standard sequence is to rotate into the XY plane, and then wait for some free precession to occur, which causes some phase to accumulate. And then if you want to undo the action of some slowly changing environment, you just apply a pi pulse, which will refocus your spin. And at the end, I just want to point out that we apply another pi by 2 pulse after the second precession period. That's because we are measuring in the population basis, unlike in NMR experiments, where you can just usually just measure directly the coherence through the looking at the free precession which occurs there. So I guess the important point is that now this echo signal is going to be sensitive to changes in the environment that occur on the time scale of the sequence. So that is a kind of like a nice tool to gain information about what's going on in the environment. And here's the signal that we obtain. So these blue peaks here are obtained by just fixing the first precession period and varying the second tau prime, and that gives you the echo. You can map out the echo peak as expected, but then the decay of the echo amplitude can be mapped out by that by just looking at those black dots over there, essentially just by varying both of them together. And you can see that the collapse occurs on a longer time scale, which is roughly on the order of 20-25 microseconds. So this initial call apps then tells you something about the dynamics of the environment. However, so this echo envelope collapses, but if you look out at longer times, it turns out it actually revives. So you get both collapse and revival in these echo, and the echo, these revival peaks themselves also decay. And at the moment, we are measuring like around, you know, roughly like 200 microseconds for this revival and the peaks of the revivals. And what I want to say here is that what this tells you basically is, first of all, that you have a big effect from this bot, this mesoscopic spin bot, but which is roughly 200, what we're measuring is like a spin, like a T2, which is on the order of 200 microseconds, which is roughly 200 times the T2 star, and it has a periodic dynamics. And so you can just look at this as a very simple mechanism, is just the Larmor precession of the spin bot that takes place. So the spin bot causes some decorrelation in the electron qubit, but then it rephases after a Larmor period, and that leads to revivals in the echo signal. And if you plot for, we've seen echo peaks and collapse and revival on pretty much every center that we looked at. And what I want to say is that we can plot that precession frequency, and that works out to be almost exactly the carbon-13 precession frequency, so that's very nice. But now I want to change tacks a little bit from understanding the decoherence mechanism, and we are also working on other experiments to understand the exact source of that decay of the revivals. Can we address and control individual nuclei in the diamond lattice? So to understand this, I'm just going to quickly go through this, is that you have a state-dependent dynamics for the nuclear spin. When the electron spin is in the state zero, the field experienced by the nucleus is zero, and so the only field that's left behind is the external magnetic field that you applied. And when M is equal to one, then the dipole field dominates, presumably for weak fields. So this results in the spin echo modulation that that I'm going to just describe here, which is that you have, when you apply a pi by 2 pulse, you create some coherence, and then you wait some time, during which time the Larmor precession takes place in the ground state, and now when you apply a pi pulse, you create that state there, which is like an entangled state. So you have conditional dynamics in the two different spin states of the electron that leads to entanglement between the spin and the electron spin and the nuclear spin. So that has two time scales, like I was just describing. One is the Larmor slow period that I'm showing here, and then there's fast oscillations due to the dipole field, which accumulates, which gives you another time scale in the problem. So this is like a coherent nuclear spin dynamics. But when you have many spins in the bot, then what happens, of course, you have to like take the product of all of these signals, and you get essentially decoherence. So you're getting entangled with the environment faster than you can get entangled with any particular spin. So you can't observe the coherent dynamics of any particular spin as fast as you get entangled with the environment. Okay, so the reason that this would be bad news, but what saves us is the fact that actually the nearest nuclei are kind of special, because they experience a stronger back action from the electron spin on the nucleus. And this can be observed in two different ways. One is, of course, the fact that since they're closer, they experience a larger hyperfine splitting. But what is a slightly less intuitive effect is that there's actually an enhanced Larmor frequency. That is, that you have coherent interactions with these individual nuclei before it gets entangled with the rest of the bot. And the reason this enhancement of the nuclear magnetic moment takes place, because the spin, the electron spin, actually gets mixed. That is, that it's no longer just a zero or one. It has some mixing between those two states when you have some component of the magnetic field that is not aligned along the spin. It's like a non-secular term, if you want to think about it in that language. So this non-secular term causes mixing between the zero and one states, and then this enhances the coupling between the two nuclear levels, or the splitting, the effective field experienced by the nuclear levels in the ground state. So this splitting occurs, it's much greater than the normal magnetic moment, and that leads to a much larger enhancement in the magnetic moment. So that's 3 minutes, you see? Okay. So here we observe the coherent dynamics. When we just zoom in on that first portion of the echo collapse, you can observe this dynamics here. We have seen it on several different centers, like over 20 centers, and each of them is slightly different. Some of them have several pins nearby. Some of them have only one, some have none. And what we observe is both that slow envelope that I'm talking about and the fast modulation before you can get collapse of the echo signal. And so the electron spin is basically getting entangled and disentangled with some isolated system before it gets entangled with the environment. So that's nice. So you can kind of think of this as a nuclear resolving microscope. You can pinpoint like a particular nuclei that you can talk to in the lattice, and you can only address that particular nuclear spin. And for just to verify all of this, you know, here's looking at a few centers. We have envelope frequency, that is the Larmor frequency of this of those nuclei plotted versus the field, and all of them are above the bare carbon 13 precession frequency. And as expected, the fast component, which is the modulation frequency due to the NV dipole, that has hardly changed with the field, which is just as you would expect. Another interesting effect, which is nice, is that the enhancement depends on the orientation with respect to the axis between the spins. And you can think of this both in terms of the fact that you have a dipolar interaction, which is going to change slightly depending on the axis between the spin one and the electron spin qubit and the nuclear spin qubit. And so that leads to some angular dependence that I'm showing here. The two curves for, say, one center are just the two different planes, the XZ or the YZ plane for that particular center. So they're slightly different due to the position dependence. And this confirms our model for the for what's going on. And it also, if you looked at enough centers and if there was sufficient information, you could get some information about the nuclear position. And I don't want to discuss this in detail, but I'll be glad to talk about it later if you want. So what I want to talk about now at the very end is that you can now use this to kind of do some nuclear spin dynamics. You can observe some nuclear spin dynamics with this. So you start with some thermal mixture of this proximal nuclear spin in the ground state, and you apply a pi by 2 pulse, which creates some superposition between the electron spin states. If you wait some time, which is exactly equal to a pi over the splitting in the upper state, you accumulate a phase on one of those states. And now you apply a pi by 2 pulse, what's going to happen is essentially you've mapped the electron spin, the nuclear spin state onto the electron spin state. So you got some entanglement, like I was just saying. Of course, this is a thermal mixture that we started out with. So there's, so what happens now if you wait for a Larmor precession, you get a pure electron, a pure nuclear state, but there's a thermal mixture in the electronic spin states. Now, however, we have a way to polarize the electronic spin by just applying a green laser. So what we do, here's the experiment. So first you polarize the electron spin, you apply the sequence, you then polarize the electron spin again, and now you wait for the Larmor period. So you process, and then you map it back onto the electron spin, and you can measure, and that shows actually exactly what you would expect. You get Larmor precession of a single isolated nuclear spin that we are observing. And this is very nice because it shows that you have coupling, coherent coupling between the electron and the nuclear spin, which you can potentially use as a good quantum memory. So I just want to summarize by saying that we have a good understanding of our decoherence mechanisms in our system as carbon 13, and we can actually use individual carbon 13 nuclei for addressing and coupling through this quantum back action. And hopefully this will drive some implementations for new protocols in quantum communication and computing. Thank you.